Like to say welcome over the phone and on the road, our representative here in the 71st District, Tony McCombie. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you this morning?
I'm glad I'm inside because it's a little foggy, damp, and wet outside.
Yeah, day two of this garbage, but there's no snow on the ground today. But I'd prefer 3 inches of snow with no rain. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Especially if you're driving it, yeah, you don't know what to do. It's like, yeah, get the raincoat or the umbrella out, but yeah, a little different, but we'll get through it.
That's right.
Well, first of all, we had a thing happen back on November 3rd, and the outcome of that for us here in the 71st District is, well, you are our representative once again, and thank you so much, and congratulations to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, when we're going through the process, we all have, you know, a magic number in our mind that we want to win a race by. And then we all wake up, and I think this is probably fair for everybody. We all wake up that morning and say, well, forget our goals. We just want to win by one. And so I was very happy by the end result to know that the district overall supports me and feels I've been doing a good job and wanted me in. So thank you to the district for keeping me in. I appreciate the support and will continue to work as hard as I do for them and for the families of the district.
Now, I know that we were scheduled to have a veto session that got taken away and a few other special sessions. How is the voice of the people being, heard in Springfield or wherever people might be?
Well, it's really actually too bad. Since the beginning in March, we have as a state, except for a few days of special session in May, we have, it has not been representative government by any means. The legislative body is supposed to be a co-equal branch of government. It certainly has not been. Our voice has only been heard by the representatives and the senators, I would say on both sides of the aisle, because I know some of my Democrat colleagues have been shouting from the rooftops and stomping their feet and wanting to go back to Springfield, wanting to have a voice, wanting to participate in conversations on how we deal with COVID, how we deal with the shutdown, how we deal with the reopen. And none of our voices have been heard. We hear day after day, the governor states that he's been having conversations with representatives and senators every day, and that's just not accurate. So we just continue to talk to folks like you, continue to put things out on social media, on our websites, send out press releases, do Zoom, and just keep getting out as much as we can and calling out the governor and the administration. And that's the best that we can do right now because we literally cannot go to Springfield. Speaker Madigan cancels veto session again, and the only other person that can call us to Springfield is the governor. And the governor said he was very disappointed that we are not going to veto, but not disappointed enough to call us there. And, if it really was a safety issue, that would be one thing. But we did go to Springfield in a very safe way in May. And I do believe we could go to the Capitol just like the Senate did. There's 118 of us that could fit, I believe, in our House chambers without the public and without lobbyists. We have a gallery. We could, come in and shift. I think we could very safely meet, but they're choosing not to. I hate to assume, but maybe they don't want to meet because they don't want to put us into a room to actually have conversation about how unrealistic some of the COVID actions have been. Maybe they don't want to hear our opinions, or maybe they don't want to talk about the ethic issues that they keep putting under the rugs and not addressing. Who am I to assume that those would be the reasons they don't want us to get into one room?
Now, how do you, we've got to put back into mitigation throughout the whole state. How do you, you've heard from business people and people that don't own businesses, how do you feel COVID is going right now with that situation?
Well, you know, there again, I believe we should have a voice as the representatives and the senators. I believe the social and the economic outcomes that are going to come from another shutdown are going to be devastating, more so than in some cases the result of what is happening with COVID. You know, when we first started this, we didn't have the supplies, we were flattening the curve, and that was certainly realistic. We know so much more about the virus, and still, again, taking action that is not reasonable, that is not common sense. You know, when you're shutting down bars and restaurants, when you're looking at a 2-3% rate of infection, it just does not make sense to be shutting down a business and then the government shutting down a business and not offering any support. I just don't understand it. Kids that are not the government parenting kids and not allowing them to be in sports, but they can go to Iowa or they can be in clubs, but they can't do it in schools. I just feel that the governor and the administration is just not being realistic and not allowing people to figure this out. You know, we need to be addressing our long-term care facilities, our prisons, our areas where we have really have been failing and where we do have our highest caseloads. And we're still not even talking about those into a high degree, in my opinion. And the vaccine will be here soon. And those areas, you know, the healthcare workers will be first and then our most vulnerable. And things will be changing very quickly. But in the meantime, I think for us to be doing more shutdowns in a way that just in some cases doesn't make sense, is not reasonable, is really going to shut down businesses forever. I don't know how we recover. I just don't know how we recover.
Once again, we're on the phone with Illinois State Representative Tony McCombie. You brought up the facilities and healthcare facilities, and we know there's a situation at the LaSalle Veterans Home. And out of Morris, Senator Sue Rezin, she was supposed to be involved with a conversation on that, and she was denied access to it. So that really hit me strange.
Yeah, and Sue has some local, I don't know if you know that, Sue has some local ties, family from Whiteside County. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Just some fun fact for you. Yeah, that's certainly not right. And I know Director Linda Chaplavia, and she is a wonderful director, and she is a veteran herself. And I can't imagine that came from her. Maybe it was her staff. I'm not sure. I couldn't speak to the reasoning. But both are very strong women. And Linda, the director, I can't imagine that she would not want input from anybody that is going to help and support our veterans. She wants them to have a voice. And if there's more people that are out speaking for them and helping them, she would want that. So I know that they will figure this out together. And I hope that Sue speaking out will certainly open that door because Sue is a strong, strong voice, a strong woman, and she's certainly not going to, she will break down that door. She's not going to just let somebody close it on her.
Now, we still have, so many people unemployed, maybe perhaps even still waiting for unemployment benefits. And the state, well, there's money sitting there that hasn't been distributed, according to quite a few outlets.
Oh, yeah. We still have quite a few on our list. Probably, you know, Liz isn't on the line with us, but I would say probably 50 to 75 still on our list. And then you have some that are dealing with underpayments, overpayments, fraud. The IDS system, I think it was Monday, the IDS director, the new director, acting director was on, and certainly there has been some improvements under her direction. And the fraud is not only statewide, it's nationwide, but certainly there was a breach that was never addressed prior to her coming on, that one of Terry Bryant down south from Murfreesboro, one of her constituents actually found that they didn't even really address a breach. There's been some fixes, but this is still a nightmare. And the governor's staff, I feel, was not honest with the governor, was maybe protecting the governor, saying, you know, they did this with Governor Rauner too. His staff would not give him all of the facts. And then he stands up and says, well, what? It's fine. It's getting better. And it really wasn't getting better. And then it makes the governor look like a fool. But, you know, when you sit there and say, well, and the acting director was saying, you know, we have people that have called hundreds of times and have been on the phone for hours and then waiting to get on and then just get cut off. Or it takes, you know, a week or 2 weeks for them to get a call back. That's a problem. That's a problem when you have children or you're taking care of your siblings or your elderly parents or just people around you, and you don't have income. And the government is the one who told you you can't go to work. That's a big, big deal. So it is still a big issue that we have to address. And just hiring more people has not solved the issues for sure. And we just need to get people back to work. And that's one of the things I'm talking about. We've got to let people work. We're not paying them. We've got to let them work. And they can go to work safely. Our businesses, our business owners, they're smart. They can do this in a safe way.
Also, back on November 3rd, Illinois had to make a choice on the progressive tax plan and which direction they wanted to see the state go with that. And I think we know the outcome of that, but now we're being, possibility we may need to find other places to tax. And I don't think that's a fair decision either.
Yeah, the governor and the administration was even threatening before the vote. If you don't vote for this, we're going to, you know, raise your taxes. What was it? I don't remember now. I think it was even 20%. And the people said, no, we're tired of you trying to, we're tired of you threatening to raise our taxes rather than actually politically and structurally reforming our state that actually could promote growth, actually have people move here, have our businesses grow, rather than chase people across, you know, our state lines. And people just said no. And that was, the turnout of that was loud and clear. And if the majority party goes and just raises taxes and goes against what the public has stated, they're going to see that in 2 years. They're going to see that again, and they're going to be voted out because it was very prevalent in the vote this cycle, and people they've had it, and they don't trust government with more money until we can figure out a better way to be efficient with the dollar and a better way to spend it. We don't need more of it, I can tell you that.
Well, Tony, I know you're a huge manufacturing proponent, and you've been to various plants and facilities in the area, and manufacturing still is leading the way, not only in our area, but across the state as well.
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Tom?
I know you're a huge manufacturing proponent, and manufacturing is still leading the way, not only in our area here, but across the state, and that's a good sign to see.
Sure, absolutely. And I hope that with the change in the administration on the federal side, that continues to grow. I think it's extremely important that we do grow that on the USA side, and that'll be interesting to see what happens there. But there is an, another factor that we talk about, and that our local manufacturers, whether it's Carroll County, Whitehead County, Rock Island County, we have a shortage of people that are working in those settings, and we can't produce a good if people aren't working. So we need to, you know, and people aren't living here, and they're not going to be working in our manufacturing and manufacturer settings. So that's a big thing that we need to be concerned about. And that's, you know, you're not going to be building a manufacturing base when you don't have people there to work. And that also goes to our, the high cost of higher education. And, you know, people are going to, you know, consider not going that route and maybe only going, which is fine, to community colleges and trade schools because of the cost of, you know, a four-year degree and going that route. And, you know, we have to look at the higher costs and the increase of mandates and what that does. And I hope that continues, but we really do need to take a look in the mirror and change some things if we want to grow our businesses. And manufacturing has changed rapidly in my lifetime, especially in Whiteside County, with the steel industry and with manufacturing. And we need to figure that out before it does go away.
I know we had a budget deadline come and go. We've got another one coming up. How are we going to fix this, address the budget issues and find out what is necessary, what isn't necessary if we don't get everybody back in session next year?
Yeah, our Leader Durkin on our side, who was unanimously voted in at our caucus in November, has publicly called out the governor and has said, hey, you need to get going on this and start addressing these issues. And he had said last February during his budget address, he had stated he was going to have all of the agencies do a cut of, I believe it was 6%. Look for efficiencies and do a cut, and nothing was even brought up when we did the budget in special session in May. So he's called out and said, well, you need to start looking within your agencies, and hopefully he does do that. And the governor will have to bring that forth in February. I do know, I believe it was last week, I think it was 7 to 10 days ago, the governor did call the four leaders together to discuss where they go with the budget. And there was an increase in income tax and sales tax. But when you pass a budget in May that they did on a $5 billion borrow from the federal government, there's obviously a budget deficit. So I just had a Zoom and with the Sterling Rotary yesterday, and we talked about how big the deficit actually is, and we need to get serious. Every year that I've been in, and I go to speak to the public after the fact, I always say, and I hate to say it, this is the biggest budget Illinois has ever passed, and I would like for 1 year to not have to say that.
Yeah, you like to fold that one up, put it back in your pocket, and say, guess what? Hey, things are looking great.
Yeah, or let's have a flat budget, you know? Let's try that for once.
Now, I know our friend, Representative Tom Dameron Dixon, he's got a, you know, he's trying to address and has had a few meetings on Speaker Madigan, and he's voiced his opinion, and so have a lot of Democrats on the other side. We do need a change there, and it needs to be taken care of and not tucked away.
Yeah, I'm not sure folks realize how important Leader Demmer is. He is our deputy leader in the House, and he is one of our budgeteers, and he is also the leader who has is leading or is trying to lead the ethics, the hearing that is actually supposed to be meeting and has not met to investigate Speaker Madigan. They're refusing to meet. It was on hold. Chris Welch, leader Welch, put it on hold before election and still refusing to meet to actually investigate public official A. And I just think it's ridiculous that they are not meeting, and they just keep having press conferences and just trying to call them out and shame them into, you know, meeting. And I just, you know, he's working really hard. We have to be held to a higher standard. You know, we work to put ourselves on the ballot through a petition process. We put ourselves through an election process. The public elects us. We choose as individuals to be held at a higher standard, and we should be. When we do something inappropriate, we should be called out for it. And if the public's not going to do it, then we as colleagues should do it. And if it was anybody else, we would be not holding a leadership or even our state rep or Senate position. I mean, we would probably be already having to resign. But nothing on the speaker. But you never know. I mean, I think they've already had 18 folks say that they won't support him in January. He seems to think, the speaker seems to think that he has the votes, but we'll see. He's a great deal maker, so it'll be interesting to see what deal he makes.
Well, coming out of this difficult 2020 and looking ahead into 2021 and beyond, what do you think is the biggest challenge for you and for the 71st District here?
Well, I think it's just unique to the 71st.
Right.
Because a lot of the districts in the state are bordering districts. So we're competing with other states to grow. And we have, it always seems, another level of government that makes it difficult. Whether it be, it could be as simple as a zoning rule passed down from whether it be the state or a city on square footage of a house to make housing more expensive, or it could be zoning on a business to make it unaffordable there to build a building, or, you know, workers' comp costs, income taxes, property taxes. I mean, property taxes are huge. And we have so many different levels that make it an easy decision to choose to grow elsewhere. And then we have states even far away that'll say, hey, come and move, and you won't pay property taxes for 5 or 10 years, and we're going to build you your building at no cost. And people are working to steal our businesses. And it's going to be really hard to compete if we don't really work at that. But this year, what's really going to be important for the state and for us as a district is the issues that surround ethics and our remap. So this is, the census is done, and this year we will be passing a new legislative map. So depending on the population, we may lose one congressional or two congressional seats. So the voice of Illinoisans will be less in D.C., and our maps will be different. So I could be representing and different people, Senator Anderson, Congresswoman Bustos. We will all be representing different people next cycle. And that's because of our population loss. So that's not good. that's not good for us to have a less voice in D.C. and around the state.
Right.
And that's this year. That's happening this year.
Well, that's huge to look at. Just huge. Big plans for Turkey Day, or probably not?
Not too much. So I will. Our Savannah Moose is having food to go, so I'm going to go and help there. My husband's working, so I'm going to go there, and then I will cook for dinner that night, and I'll my family if they want to come by, and if they do, they do, and if they don't, they don't. I'm gonna not stress this year. I say every year I'm not going to stress about who's coming and who's not, but this year I'm really not going to stress. I'm just going to cook, and if they show up, they show up.
Hey, that sounds like the perfect plan. Well, yes, everybody should take that note. Don't stress it.
That's right.
Eat a lot of turkey and go into the turkey coma, and everything is good when you wake up. So,
absolutely.
Well, again,
how about you? What are you doing?
Very little.
Are you a turkey or a ham man?
This is going to be turkey. Ham will be for the next holiday.
Okay. All right. No. Great. I think we're going to do something different. I think I'm going to do chicken.
Oh. Okay. Just
I'm going to do one of the chickens from Sullivan's Foods. Like, they have them up front. Delicious.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go. Good move.
Yeah.
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 You won't get as drowsy after eating a chicken. It's all in the turkey, I hear. So,
That's right. So, well, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and to all your listeners.
Well, thank you for taking, time. You're trying to get something done there, but thanks for calling in this morning. And congratulations again. And happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, Tony.
I appreciate that. Take care, Tom.
All right. Thank you very much.